Welcome to the Respect the Rock podcast. I'm your host, Tallulah McKenzie, and today we are talking to John Morris, author of the new guidebook, 17 Down Under, Australian Rock Climbing. John is a climber from Victoria with 20 years experience climbing and chronicling the journey in every state and territory of Australia. He is an engaged and prominent young member of the Australian climbing community. In our chat today, John reflects on the process of writing about his lifetime of experience, climbing in Durite, and a community response to the proposed Durite Cultural Landscape Management Plan by Parks Victoria. Welcome to the podcast, John. Thanks for joining us.
No worries.
I thought I'd jump straight in by asking you, how long have you been climbing around Mount Orapiles, and what does that site mean to you?
So Mount Orapiles was one of the first places I ever climbed, and that would have been over 25 years ago now. So I would have been five or something like that when I first climbed at Mount Orapiles, and it just set, like, and I like to call it Durite as well. And it was like the basis and platform of where I did all of my rock climbing, where all of my rock climbing started. I did have a few places that are a bit closer to home, like Mount Alexander near Bendigo, but I was always looking forward to heading out there. But it was one of those places whilst I started climbing a lot with my dad, and we would go climbing together, and he took me to Orapiles a lot. But it wasn't until I was 14 that I started planning climbing trips on my own that I really built my connection there, because when I was 16, 17, I became a guide, and dad would actually drive me to Orapiles, drop me off at the campground, and I would stay in the pines for a week. Even as young as 17, I'd stay in the pines for like 1 or 2 weeks, and I would actually take people rock climbing as a guide, and be paid to do that. And then that was like my pocket money that I used to all through uni and all that sort of thing. So it was like, as I grew up and learned about life and things, like Durite was this backdrop to all of that. And the climbing there is super unique because of how the buttresses have formed and how the rock is super solid. It lends itself to easy rock climbing. Like there's holds everywhere and it's not super steep. Like there's hard stuff as well, but the volume of easy climbing at Orapiles is something that's not replicated anywhere else in Australia. So you learn to climb there, and you then have climbs of every difficulty after that. So you could spend an entire climbing career at Orapiles. So it is a super unique place.
You're about to release a new climbing book that's looking at climbing in Australia holistically, but your first one was just in Victoria, and yep. So I imagine Durite was a significant portion of that.
Absolutely. So the book focused on 50 climbs in Victoria, and half of them, 25, were at Durite, and then a further six or something were in the Grampians. So I like to think of Orapiles and Grampians, so Gary Word and Durite, as connected in a single place. So they're, by car, they're about an hour apart, but they're actually connected underground by a bed of granite. And the granite is what makes Orapiles, Durite really unique, because the molten lava of the granite metamorphized the sandstone on top of it. And Durite is this quartzite crown of metamorphized sandstone on top of the granite, and then that granite goes all the way to the Gary Word, the Grampians, and it is mostly sandstone. It didn't get superheated like Durite did, but the rock climbing of both is just superb. So I like to think of them as one place.
Was it different reflecting on climbing in that area now versus when you were 15?
Definitely. Yeah. Actually, it's a bit of a confession on that one is that I traveled the world a bit. So I went to America, I've been to Europe a fair bit. I went to New Zealand. And I left Victoria, did some world travel and then came back to Coolangatta in Queensland. And I lived in Queensland for like 4 years, something like that, and then moved to Sydney. So in all that time, we were doing trips around Australia to work on the new book. And whenever we visited Victoria, we would drop into places, but it was always like brief visits. We'd visit family and we'd just do a couple of climbs. So it didn't feel like I was part of the community as much as I had been previously. So I wasn't necessarily involved in the developments that were happening with the management of the parks. So what I got to do instead is that I might come and take a few photos for the book, but I must admit I was just reminiscing on experiences that I'd had prior, and I didn't let what was happening currently affect too much about how I felt about the places. For better or worse, that was kind of just how I did it. So I was paying attention to what climbs were and weren't permitted to try and have as much as possible permitted climbs in the book. But the current management plan hasn't been concluded, and we may not know until the end of the year. So there's a chance there's a bunch of climbs that I'm featuring won't be allowed. But I decided that when I go to print, whatever is allowed at that time is worth talking about.
Speaking about parks management of the area and the controversial, the divisive Juraya Cultural Landscape Management Plan, by talking to people in community, your own experience returning there, how do you feel about the plan? What are its perks? What are its failings?
It's a difficult one to talk about because at face value, they wanted to close 60% of the climbing and then reinstate maybe 20% of it or something. But there's no real thought about what gets banned and what doesn't and how that impacts the climbing community. And then what makes it really hard is they haven't really given very strong reasons of why it's necessary. So there's been a real lack of understanding of why this management plan has been brought forward, because there's obviously something driving it, but there's not necessarily a need for the management to release that information. So it's led to a lot of confusion and despair. And this is actually on the tail end of, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago now, about 60% of the climbing got banned in Garryward, the Grampians. And to a certain extent, it was understood a little bit more because there was some controversy over chalk and handholds being really clear in caves, potentially sacred caves, and then bolts being placed in these caves as well. So they wanted to get rid of all that sort of thing. And there was a certain understanding of maybe that has some grounds, whereas the bans at Arapiles are not based on any physical harm that's that pronounced. And it's predominantly a trad climbing area. So you go with your own protection. And as you go up, the person following you removes the gear that you're putting in the rock, opposed to sport climbing where you put bolts up the length of the climb and then the bolts stay there forever. And as you climb up, you clip and unclip those bolts, which is a lot more prominent in the Grampians. So because that didn't exist at Arapiles, everyone was like, why are these bans necessary? Why have they even been brought forward? And there was no satisfactory response. Part of it was because of traditional sites at the base of the walls for chipping and quarrying. But even walking over those surfaces doesn't actually damage the sites because the rock is so hard. So there was no understanding of how visiting the area impacted those sites. So a lot of the management plan didn't feel founded. A lot of people at parks have lost their jobs over it. And there's a big change happening, and the postponing the plan by 6 months and reviewing it and to the point where they've needed third-party reviews and everything. So they've realized that they've potentially made a mistake. But the back to the bands in Gary Word, that kind of just, it was challenged, but nothing could really go through to prevent it. And nothing has really been confirmed, but what they did do is they made it clear in the plant management plan what wasn't allowed to be climbed on. And to a pretty large extent, climbers did respect that. But that 60% closure is by far the largest climbing ban in Australia. And the extension of that is actually the largest climbing ban in the world. There's no climbing bans in any other country that's even approached that size. And the quality of the climbing that's banned is also some of the best, like it is the best climbing in the country between Grampians and Arapiles. And it sort of just feels weird that such huge things can happen without a firm justification of how the protection is a positive thing.
A real breakdown in communication and consultation that seemed to defy the plan.
And I think a huge part of that is there's not really a requirement for them to need to communicate, because they're the managers of the park and they're in charge of how it's managed. So the users feel like they've been let down, but that desire to be part of the consultation isn't necessarily in the legislation. They don't have to provide that. It would feel good, but it's not something that they feel like they've needed to do.
You live in New South Wales now. Do you notice differences between New South Wales approaches to land management in comparison to Victoria?
Yeah, definitely. New South Wales and Queensland have had issues like this, but there is a lot more discussions around it and more transparency about what the two parties want. And I've seen a lot more middle ground choices, but I've also just heard a lot more about what the pros and cons of every decision is. And I have noticed that more in New South Wales and Queensland than Victoria on a very large scale. Because say a comparable thing is Mount Warning, Wollumbin on the northern New South Wales border of Queensland near Yukai. They stopped the walk there, but what was different about that was that it's a sacred mountain for cultural becoming a man, sacred site sort of thing. And theoretically, nobody's meant to be on that mountain unless they're doing it for the proving ground. So, I mean, like that is a very clear cultural heritage that you're not necessarily meant to be there, whereas there's not as much known stories about Gary Word and Durite. And I think the harsh reality of that is a lot of that information has been lost. And that is awful. Whereas the history is still quite remembered in Queensland and New South Wales in very specific places, like the Glasshouse Mountains and Wollumbin and places like that. So when they do restrictions, a lot of people are like, oh, you know what, that's a fair enough reason. And like as a whole, the climbing community has been really respectful with fair and reasonable climbing bans. It's just that there hasn't been as much transparency and it's hard to know where you stand in Victoria.
My last question for you, what perspectives from the climbing community do you wish had a greater platform?
One of the things that I've been finding really hard to watch with this management plan is just the number of just privileged white people who are the only people talking about it. And there is a couple of like Indigenous First Nation climbers, and they're like, I don't want to be anywhere near the publicity on this thing. So it's really hard. I wish that people with the more balanced and reasonable approaches were more verbal, because a lot of the people with a really strong attitude of what they want don't have a problem with saying it. But some of the people who want to learn more and want to listen as much as they want to talk don't necessarily have a platform because they're not clawing for it themselves. So it would be nice to hear more from them.
That's a beautiful note to end it on. Thanks for your time, John, and for sharing your knowledge. It's really appreciated.
No worries, Talula. Thank you.